Hey everyone, if you want to find some way to support the ongoing Screen Actors Guild strike that is going on right now, sadly, you can go to the, as usual, entertainmentcommunityfund.org and make your donation designated to film and television. It is not a strike fund, it is for those who are affected by the strike because the executives running Hollywood ruin everything for the sake of profit. We at Renegade Animation and Renegade Pop Culture stand with the ongoing strikes and whichever unions are about to go on strike. With all that said, if you like what we do, please give us a like, a follow, and a rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to us. We are everywhere. Also, consider supporting our Patreon. That way, we can keep doing what we love, and that's talking about supernatural and spooky animation. And now, on with the show.
What's going on, everyone? Welcome to a spooky episode of Renegade Animation on the Renegade Pop Culture Podcast Network. My name is Mike. I'll be your host this evening. Joining me, as always, is the animation guru himself, Cameron.
Howdy, howdy.
And today, yeah, this is our, I think, third annual Halloween special that hopefully is up by Halloween this time. We are talking about two surprisingly horror slash spooky themed animated series, both from DreamWorks. We've got Fright Crew, which is on Peacock and Hulu, and Curses on Apple Plus. But first, before we get there, we haven't done one of these indie spotlights in a while, so we're going to open the show with pilot of The Amazing Digital Circus. So, Cameron, do you want to describe this one?
So The Amazing Digital Circus came out fairly recently as of recording this podcast and was once again one of those indie pilots that took the internet by storm. And it's a CG pilot, which a lot of the stuff that's going on right now is mostly 2D animation. You know, Has Been Hotel, Hell of a Boss, that Western comedy one, and Lackadaisy. But this is a computer animated web series by Gooseworks and Glitch Productions. And as of right now, has become a very positively reviewed show and has gained about 41 million views and in counting and such. So after putting on a virtual reality headset, a woman becomes trapped in a virtual circus world alongside with five other beings who were once human. Our main character becomes known as the Jester Pomni. They are now subject to the whims of the circus's ringleader, Kane, while also dealing with their own personal traumas. This one was interesting because for the other ones, I was very positive on them while still having issues here and there with some of them. Here, I watched this pilot twice, and yet I was very positive on the first round, and I was still enjoying it the second time around. But a lot of the elements of this show, or potential show, really not rubbed me the wrong way, but the things that were keeping it together were starting to fall apart a little for me. And I hate saying that because I want to be super supportive of indie animation because of all the hell that is going on right now with the animation industry and such. So
Yeah, I understand that. I've only seen it the one time, but one of the things I messaged Cameron once I finished, or even like just halfway through, I'm like, I mean this in the best way possible. What the hell am I watching?
that's the thing about this one. I did not know going in that this was like a Sword Art Online dot hack sign kind of thing where there's a virtual headset that has warped people into this chaotic circus. I'll start with the positives with this pilot. One, I like that it's a CG pilot because like, I'm getting so sick and tired of the complaining between 2D animation purists and their hatred for CGI.
Same.
I think what I like about the visual look of this pilot is it reminds me a lot of the higher end PlayStation 1 cutscene VFX, like the CGI and what have you.
Oh, yes, absolutely. It has that kind of, it has like the vibe of those educational games from like the 90s.
Right. Like very early polygon look. And the animation itself, which a lot of it was done in Unreal Engine, because you saw a thank you to Epic Games, which they're the owners of the Unreal Engine and what have you. It reminds me of a lot of those early CGI cartoons that were not quite ready for prime time, but still got released anyway, because CGI back then was super friggin' expensive to do. But I liked the floatiness of it all. I did not mind fluid and kind of not Pixar, DreamWorks, theatrical, budget polished the CGI was.
I felt like intentionally the style they were going for was something more weightless and bouncy.
Exactly. It's meant to put you into this, like, here's this super charming, supposedly safe environment, but there is absolutely nothing safe about the world of the amazing digital circus. And that's kind of where my issues start to pile up a little. I feel like, at least with this cast of characters, I've seen, like, it's a little overly familiar with the cast. We have, of course, Kane, the chaotic, neutral, all-powerful deity character who is wacky and but is also a little unhinged about it all. Like, he kind of cares about what happens to these folks, but he's also all about having them essentially like go through hell for his amusement. We have Jax, the purple rabbit, who's the snarky, sassy character, or Ragatha, the Raggedy Ann inspired character, who is like kind and mostly the neutral party of making sure everyone is on the same page. Then we have the sarcastic Zubul, who is like very Stephanie Beatriz from Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Yeah.
Or like the cute nihilistic Bubble. And then the Kinger, weird name, but I liked Sean Triplock's performance as this talking chess piece who kind of glitches out, and his character moves around sometimes like it's a, the game's about to crash on you. I just feel like I've seen these characters before. I understand why it's such a popular group of characters to have with one another, because that results in easy chemistry for them to bounce off of one another. I just don't think I care enough about the world to, as of right now, want to see more of.
I understand where you're coming from. There is a lot of negative space, and no, I'm not just talking about the void in the world building, in the development of these characters. They are essentially just archetypes, which is fine if there actually is more to the story. And I want to see where this goes, but I also know they have to put a bit more meat on the bones of whatever the show is going to be.
Because, like, as far as we know, there's Kane is the ruler of this digital world, and he's not very fond of the idea of anyone leaving, nor does he actually have an idea of what is on the outside of this world. Or, like, how did these people come here? Who made the AI or world that they're all trapped in? And such. I guess I'm getting a, like, maybe I'm just not immersing myself within the world, because I constantly think about stuff like this or Sword Art Online or something, where it's just like, okay, so if these people are stuck in this game or this world, how are you expecting them to keep on playing the game without them starving or getting up or whatever? even though I liked the voice cast with people like Lizzie Freeman, Marissa Lynti, Sean Shiplock, Ashley Nichols, Alex Roshan, and Michael Kovac, I don't find the characters themselves as interesting as I feel like the show wants you to think they are.
The performances are kind of doing a lot of the heavy lifting. Kovac especially is breathing so much life into Jax, but Jax himself is just the more aggressive side of like Bugs Bunny or Yakko.
Pomni is, I don't know. I don't think there was much of an arc for this first episode. It just seems like it was constantly freaking out, trying to calm down, freaking out, trying to calm down, freaking out, freaking out, freaking out. And then at the end, it's just like, well, I'm stuck here. It feels like, and we talked about this over messages, it feels like a tech demo. There's a lot of potential here. And it's a good pitch video, and especially with how many views it got, I can see some company wanting to team up and say, like, hey, let's make this a full series or whatever. But there needs to be more to it. They do introduce stuff like the whole if a character starts to lose it, they turn into those glitchy, blobbish entities. For at least right now, I feel like there's just a bunch of pieces that we are given, and the instructions aren't very clear about what we are supposed to take away from this. I remember this short was described as what if Toy Story, but the characters were jerks. And I just don't buy that. I don't buy that these are toys or like the Toy Story angle that they're going for. Now, I do believe and agree with the inspiration that they apparently cited as with I have no mouth and I must scream, and the aesthetic being inspired by the I Spy book series.
That is where I recognize a lot of the vibe of this. I used to read those I Spy books like all the time growing up.
I mean, those are cool books. I played the PC version of some of those books like all the time. It was fun. I did find myself laughing from time to time. Like the animation on the characters are great. And I loved the sequence where Kane was like, we have so many activities, including, and then his eyes just blue screen. Or like Jax being like, you got to be quiet. I can't hear the escalator. And it's just like, oh, screw you, buddy. Kinger being like kind of there, but also manic. And or the joke of like, you know, honestly, Kinger, I thought you'd go first. You'd be like the next one to turn. And then Jax comes in and be like, well, that's just the thing. Kinger is constantly reliable and not being reliable for anything. Like, there's a lot of personality here. I like it. And I do know there was a popular, or at least one of the popular animation YouTubers helped out with the animation at points. Oh yeah, Kevin Timmertoons. If you've seen his Somebody Else Start Living My Life song or any of his quirky like animated shorts or stuff like how he did a
Didn't you do the how to make 3D Doofenshmirtz?
Yeah, he did. And he also did a Adding Def to Doof from Phineas and Ferb cartoon, and he does a lot of different like CGI shorts that are really fun, like Delete This Tweet, and like I said, Somebody Else Started Living My Life. He's got a great Muppet aesthetic with how he does animation, and you could totally see why he was brought on to help with the Amazing Digital Circus.
Now that I'm putting two and two together, it's no wonder why aesthetically has a lot of personality.
I mean, that's the thing. If you study enough about animation and individual animators, you can absolutely start picking apart who did what on certain films. Like, if you watch The Fox and the Hound, if you watch the human movements in different scenes, you can tell Don Bluth worked on a few of those moments just because of how he put so much weight and animation into the movements.
Oh, yeah.
It's that kind of thing. But otherwise, I don't have much else to say about the Amazing Digital Circus. I liked it, but it's definitely not my favorite of the pilots that we've seen so far. I still think Lackadaisy is my favorite.
Lackadaisy is probably mine as well. This, I will say, if you're curious and you want to see what everyone's talking about, then check it out. But I don't know what the future holds for this project.
I'd like to see more. After getting like 41 or 42 million views, you know there's going to be more.
Oh, yeah.
I want to be careful of how I word my criticisms for this because I love the indie animation scene, but man, do a lot of people for some reason just kind of hate the indie animation scene for no real reason.
Always feels like they're punching down when criticizing indie animation projects. And we've talked about this before, that most times criticisms like this are A, not at all constructive, or B, have such a an unwarranted, like, pompous attitude. You think you know more than actual professionals.
It's a shame. I love the indie animation scene. I want it to do well. And we have to be supportive about it. And it's not like you cannot criticize anything. I have plenty of criticisms for like the original Hazbin Hotel and Hell of a Boss pilots. Like there's a lot I could critique about it, but I'm going to be critical about it. Like respective with the criticism. 'Cause that's how,
Exactly.
like, that's how people should and will take feedback. It's just like, hey, I wish this was done a little better or whatever. And then they'll be like, oh, well, thank you. We'll take that into consideration in the future. Give it a watch if you haven't yet. I mean, out of 42 million views, I don't know who hasn't seen it.
I know, right?
But yeah, I hope there's more to it. Congrats to Gooseworks and Glitch Productions. I hope that they have a good future ahead of them for this series. But now it's time to do something a little different instead of just doing one review after the other for these two shows, The Fright Crew and Curses. We're going to do kind of like what we did with the TMNT episodes and what have you. We're going to set it up differently. So with the Fright Crew, the Peacock and Hulu series that is executive produced by Eli Roth, among other big names. We follow a group of teens in New Orleans who one night gain the powers of the voodoo deities. And just to be clear, it's not the Americanized what we think of voodoo. It's actually the religion of voodoo. And it's spelled differently, and there's absolutely a reason why you need to differentiate the two. And with these new powers, they have to stop an evil force from taking over the city. And with curses, we follow a family who one day find out that their dad was keeping a secret from them and ends up turned to stone, and they must find their way through the family mansion and the artifacts that they have to bring their father back to the land of the living and set things right, while also avoiding the threats along the way and the possible encounter of their ancestor, who is voiced by Robert Englund, aka Freddy Krueger. Before we get started, it is so weird to have two different DreamWorks animated TV series released in the same month. Fright Crew came first on October 2nd, and then as of recording this, Curses came out on Friday on Apple Plus. It's so odd to me that DreamWorks would do this. I get no, I mean, it's not like it doesn't make sense. Two horror themed shows. Okay, put them in Halloween or adjacent to October or whatever. But to put them in the same month and for them to be entirely different experiences is an interesting experiment. I'm going to be curious if people do latch on to these two shows, which one is going to get more support or attention from, because I could see it going either way with both of them getting like two or three more seasons each.
Based on the endings of each respective season alone, I hope these two last a while. There was another DreamWorks show on Peacock that we kind of fell off on, the Cleopatra in Space one.
I feel bad for dropping off on that one, but then it's just like when all the shows started coming out, it was easy for that one to get lost in the shuffle, which is a shame, but hey, that's what happens sometimes.
My point is, I think it's possible that there is more that's like in the can, but you know how streaming services work. They split up like 20 episode orders and call that two seasons.
And hopefully the recent ending of the writer's strike and the upcoming animation strike, because we know it's going to happen. After last year and this year, you know they're going to go on strike.
It's honestly just a matter of how unanimous is the vote. It's not a question of whether, it's a question of when.
Exactly. So we're going to talk about the story first when talking about these two. I think the Fright Crew has a slightly edgier tone to its overarching story because, I mean, granted, I think it helps that, like we've mentioned, Eli Roth is the executive producer for this. And I'm still shocked that Eli Roth doesn't do more family-friendly stuff because he tends to do pretty well with those, more so than his more edgy, nihilistic, like R-rated gore fests.
That's something that I wanted to comment on, because it's such a weird niche to be like so much better at telling stories for like family or all ages as opposed to your more adult content.
That's his thing. He's going to want to push buttons and do stuff like the Green Inferno and Cannibal Holocaust and such, or like stuff adjacent to that. That's his thing. I get it. It's just not super appealing personally to me because I remember seeing that one live action film he did, I think way back in 2018.
The house with the clock in its walls.
And I was just like, this is kind of cool to see him do this. I feel like he was much more creative with stuff like this, that movie and the Fright Crew, than he was with just doing more hyper violence, gore, and just like the Rob Zombie kind of stuff, also. And I like that the story focused on a lot of complicated, at least for teenagers, themes like Pat, who's voiced by Terrence Little Gardenhigh, who might be the best character in the show. His
Pat is
whole
so good.
arc of dealing with the loss of his father, just like finally getting to meet him and realizing that he can't bring him back, is shockingly heartwarming and complex for a show that is still very much aimed at a family audience. Like, that's a very adult thing to talk about with your kids show about dealing with loss and grief of losing a loved one and such.
I think that's what I love about the show. We'll get to animation in a second, but for now, just this definitely, yes, it's for families, but I think out of the two, this leans a little bit more for like young adults. And I think the chemistry between our five main protagonists is a lot of fun. The supporting characters are great. The second I heard Rob Paulsen voicing,
The Rougarou leader.
yeah, Lou. The second I heard his voice, I'm like, oh, yep, I'm excited. This is the seal of approval when you have big names like that in your cast.
I like that they also chose teenage actors. I think that helps. Like, I mean, we saw this with Mutant Mayhem like a few months ago, where they bring an authenticity to being teenagers over having adults voice teenagers and what have you. You have a pretty good cast overall. You have Sydney, Michaela, Tim Johnson Jr., Grace Liu, Chester Rushing, Jack Coleman, Vanessa Hudgens, Josh Richards, X Mayo, Jonelle Kennedy, David Kaye, Gray Griffin, Reggie Watkins, Cherise Booth, Melanie Laurent, Chris Jai Alex, and Keston John and Krizia Bejos, like rounding out a pretty good overall story of these teenagers who are using their powers to prevent this demonic force from taking over the town and stopping these fairy-like entities from stealing souls, or the conflict between the Rougarous and the vampires from becoming worse. And while it still has like moments where it's very much a family show, where you can like pick up on it, like Missy being kind of this snooty, popular kid, or Stanley being the kind of dense individual of the team, even though he's, with his abilities, he's the smartest person in the room. Which I like that the powers that they got from these entities, like these deities of the voodoo religion, weren't just offensive abilities. They weren't just like all fire, wind, water, ice. I mean, Salil gets the elemental powers, but maybe gets the ability to traverse between the living and the spirit world. Missy becomes super strong and becomes a Rougarou. Stanley has an immense amount of knowledge. And Pat, who is also probably the smartest kid in the room also, is very aware of the voodoo religion and the supernatural stuff.
It's a very well-rounded power set that this group of kids are bestowed.
Again, we'll talk about animation last because I want to get characters. Like, I was a little worried about some of the archetypes that they were doing, like maybe being so nervous, kind of like if you've seen the documentary on Shudder, Horror Noir, Black actors and Black characters in movies did not, for the longest time, did not have the greatest representation until, like, in horror, until, like, the 70s and the 80s, because it was just like, whoa, I'm scared. And for maybe, like, I was a little worried that they were kind of focusing a little too much on that aspect of his character. But I like that the characters are all strong in their portrayal. Like, they have a lot going on to them, like Missy dealing with her anger issues, or Celio being the, you know, the leader of the bunch.
Pretty complex character arcs that each one has. They all have their own issues to work out, and by the end of the series, they form a cohesive unit.
Now, compared to Curses, Curses is the more family-friendly alternative, even though it still has scares and horror aspects to it. But with its focus on a singular family, mostly a brother, sister, and mother, with a smaller cast of secondary characters, I don't think they are as complex as the Fright Crew cast, but I do like some of the story arcs that they deal with, like Russ and Pandora, the two siblings, dealing with the fact that they miss their father, and they have a relationship that is wholly distinct with their father from one another. Like, Russ, voiced by Andre Robinson, is more into the exploring and historical stuff, while Pandora was more like the goofy father-daughter dynamic. I could see how that could bring up some like mixed emotions about, like, there is a story arc where they deal with the fact that they think, I miss my father more than you, and I'm jealous that he had that relationship with you and I could not have that with him. And I think that's interesting. I thought that was a very touching moment within the season.
Not only that, but there's even like a scene where Sky, their mother, has a moment where she's sort of like, she is sort of lamenting the fact that she's spent so much time being their mom that she hasn't had enough time to have her own emotions, to grieve the loss of her husband. She's kind of juggling probably more than she can handle in the situation.
Exactly, she is, and she's a very likable character. She's one of the better mom characters that I've seen in animation of recent years. What Curses lacks in a smaller cast, the secondary characters make up for it by being more distinct. Where we have Stanley, the wooden totem, and Larry, the pirate head, who are both voiced by Rhys Darby and James Marsters, are very amusing. I liked the two of them together.
They have a nice camaraderie, those two.
And Margie, the tailspin pilot of the cast, voiced by Rhea Perlman, is delightful. She's like the cool grandma that everyone wished they had.
Yeah, she's great.
And the cast overall is pretty good. Like we already mentioned, Rhys Darby, James Marsters, and Rhea Perlman. But we've got Gabrielle Navajo Green and Andre Robinson, Lyric Lewis, and Alex, the father, is voiced by Reed Scott. And another funny connection with this movie, I mean, this show with the other one, is that John Krasinski is the executive producer for this one.
I'm not opposed to sort of like A-list celebrities attaching themselves to animated projects as long as, well, A, the people involved are treated with respect, and B, we'll get to the quality of the animation in a second, but story-wise, this is pretty tight. And you know me, you know how much I love my pulpy adventures that mix in some horror elements, and this was a good recipe.
Yeah, this one is definitely more globetrotting adventure compared to Fright Cruise, like we're going to be in one location, so you better like New Orleans.
And to be fair, I do like New Orleans.
Oh no, a lot of history, a lot of personality. With Curses, you describe this one as an edutainment series, and I think that's true because you get to learn a little bit about the culture and the mythology around some of the supernatural stuff that's connected to some of these artifacts that they are returning or are the focus of the episode.
It's not even just like one culture either. There's a variety. There's obviously they do the sort of Mesoamerican nations.
Japan, Fennec, there's Celtic. And of course, the first three episodes are all about, well, the first arc of the 10 episodes that are there are like revolve around folklore and history from Africa. And the on depending on like what villain I prefer, I think Fright Crew has a more concrete villain with the demonic entity that they have to stop.
And to some extent, the mayor.
But Cornelius, who's voiced by Robert Englund, is more of like his actions are why the specific family is cursed. So it says it's all about, hey, don't be a colonial heartless monsters with stealing other people's cultures, because that's what he did. That's all he did
Yep.
was steal from everyone else. And yeah, you're not a good person if you do that. But the two shows so far with characters and story complement one another, because if you want a show that has a little more of a bite to it, you can watch Fright Crew. But if you want to watch something that's a little more family friendly and for younger kids, you can watch Curses, because it has two young kids who are essentially the leads along with the mom and then the two very likable pirate skull and wood idol character, Stanley and Larry.
Curses has more of like it's pulpy, kind of has that Amblin vibe, where Fright Crew, it's got Stranger Things vibes. It's more for like a slightly older audience, but still generally family friendly.
It's like you got your Goosebumps and then you got your scary stories to tell in the dark.
Yeah, there we go.
And that's how you can compare the tone of these two shows. Curses is more Goosebumps. Fright Crew is more like a slightly friendlier version of scary stories to tell in the dark. Now, where they differentiate themselves in the most direct way is the animation. And unfortunately, Curses wins out in that regard with this cool CGI comic book, sort of Mike Mignola coloring and shading to like the characters in the world that Curses envelops. It's a very cool looking CGI show with, while the human designs look a little generic, the way that they do like the painted look on like the hair and the world around them, very cool looking show.
It's all the details in Curses that make the show stand out. Everything from like the backgrounds to the texture on all the artifacts, like the house that they're in. They went out of their way to inject a lot of personality in the overall aesthetic of this production, which I really
Exactly.
appreciate.
And unfortunately, like, I think Fright Crew has more interesting human designs, but the puppet-like 2D animation is probably the most distracting aspect of it, and it's a shame. Like, the animation, like, if you've seen, like, PBS shows and such, if you watch them, I mean, like, you catch them on a glance when you're, like, at the doctor's office or whatever, or, like, getting your passports. Photos taken where they have to have like a TV on for the kids and whatever. Doesn't look the best in movements, which is a shame because I think it nails its atmosphere. But the movements is where it kind of hurts and it becomes distracting because, I mean, and that sucks. Just, I did not like how the characters moved.
As long as you're invested in the story, eventually the limits of its animation won't be as distracting. For the first two episodes, because it's a two-parter, yeah, I was like, okay, I see where people are taking issue with the art style, but I just love these characters so much that I'm gonna keep going. By like episode five or six, I was just in.
Same, I agree. Like once you get over the animation, you wrap yourself in its very haunted vibe and atmosphere, you're going to be fine because the writing is what helps it. It's like watching certain anime. If the writing is good enough, I'm willing to overlook the possibly mediocre animation quality. But sometimes a lot of animation productions don't get the pipeline that they rightfully deserve. And unfortunately, that's kind of what it feels like here. I'm glad that DreamWorks didn't go with a more generic look to the characters via like CGI, but I wish they got like the same, either the same studio or the same production team behind like Kipo and Age of Wonder Beast or something, which I know a few of the people that like who worked on that show did work on this one. But I just mean, like, in terms of the 2D animation quality.
I don't really know exactly what the pipeline was like for, well, for either of these shows, but especially not Fright Crew, that, say, for example, Studio Mir wasn't available. And I know they've had their hands full with various other projects, but still.
Mostly Netflix
Yeah.
productions.
Yeah, mostly Netflix.
Or like Studio Mirror adjacent studios, like that one that did the Dragon Age anime from last year too. Like, but otherwise, I think that's the only thing that holds back the Fright Crew. Because sometimes in Curses, the CGI animation shows its limits with how the characters run. Like, I wish there was a little more weight and oomph to the movements. But I think with the supernatural stuff that they throw into the animation, it makes up for whatever little minor hiccups I could have. And a lot of these are minor hiccups. Like, let's just say this isn't the whole Lucifer and the Biscuit Hammer kind of like, wow, something went horribly wrong here and there's no way to look past it kind of thing. So, otherwise, it's really cool that, like, nowadays we are getting horror aimed at family or kid audiences, because I think for a lot of times, kids can handle horror. There's definitely some things I would not show a 5-year-old kid, like The Thing or Alien or whatever. But you need a gateway drug for horror for kids to like partake in before they move to the edgier stuff.
I agree with that. And while we are on the topic of DreamWorks, to this day, I am still sad about the loss of Spooky Jack, which would have been one of the rare Blumhouse collaborations with DreamWorks. And at the time, I got really excited because I have wanted a more consistent stream of animated horror projects that aren't just horror anime. I'm hoping that these two shows are successful enough that it inspires other creators to be like, yeah, we can have more horror representation in animation.
Exactly. DreamWorks is working on something with Netflix for next year, if I remember correctly. And that's going to be a lot of, and I think it's sort of supernatural-ish, like in tone and premise. I forgot what it was called, like off the top of my head. But it's cool to see people in animation want to do stuff with horror, because I mean, a lot of times Halloween specials that air every year are very family friendly. Not to say there was ever a time where it was nothing but like, oh yeah, we traumatize kids and that's okay. Well, with DreamWorks working on, and I just found the name of it, Orion and the Dark. Like, you look at that and it's like, man, that looks pretty cool. And hopefully, like, they and like other companies like either revive or do more with horror side of filmmaking, because everyone can enjoy it. It's probably one of the most versatile genres that you can work with. I mean, I guess you can make any genre of filmmaking and TV production versatile, but there are definitely things that are easier to get into than others.
One last thing, speaking of Halloween specials, one thing I kind of appreciate about both these shows is that even though we are seeing them and talking about them around Halloween, Halloween actually doesn't play a factor in the plot of either of these, which is another reason why I want to see more horror representation in animation, because there are more stories to tell than just the umpteenth Halloween special from like whatever show is like currently airing on television.
Exactly. I think that's what was kind of interesting. Like, I didn't even think about them as Halloween adjacent shows. They just happen to be horror based shows that just happen to release in the month of Halloween.
Exactly.
So, if you have Apple Plus or you have Peacock or Hulu, definitely give these shows a watch. But for now, I think our next podcast is going to be about, we might do one for Under the Boardwalk, which Paramount is just unfairly throwing under the bus, but we'll get to that when we get to that. So, otherwise, that's what you have to look forward to next.
I'm looking forward to the fall anime season, despite the, what is it, 35 titles that we have to cover.
Oh, God, yeah, like this was a huge season. It's a little imposing. I had to stop myself because work got the best of me and the episode for anime. And it's going to be fun. I like the last one we did, so we'll see how this one goes. So
But until next time, Cameron, where can everyone find you online?
you can find me on Twitter as long as that garbage fire is still around, and on Blue Sky at Cam's Eye View. I also have my own website called camseyeview.biz, where I review animated films and shows from around the world called The Other Side of Animation. I also have a Patreon at patreon.com/camseyeview. That's where you can find me.
And you guys can find me on various social media at CaptainK42. You can check out my quick thoughts on letterboxd.com/CoachK42. And you can follow Renegade Pop Culture on Facebook and that place at Ren Pop Culture. You can also find us on YouTube, Podchaser. Consider supporting our Patreon at patreon.com/RenegadePopCulture. Listen to all of our podcasts on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you listen. And last but not least, everything can be found at renegadepopculture.com. Need an escape? So do we. That'll do it for this episode of Renegade Animation. We will catch you guys later. Peace out.